Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I live in Los Angeles, and I'm a Democrat, but on the moderate side.
Hi, I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia, self-described economic conservative and self-confessed Republican.
And tonight, I am your liberal Democrat, Greg Matuszak from Cincinnati, Ohio. And I guess also I'll be the meat in the Kevin and DJ sandwich, keeping you guys apart, I guess.
Yes, you're the referee. So please find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Plus, you'll find some blogs and commentary there that we add occasionally. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And most importantly, please rate and review us on iTunes because it brings in more listeners, which makes us even more money, which lets me add that fifth story to my house. So, and with that in mind, what do we have on the docket for tonight, gentlemen?
The great cheese state of Wisconsin is coming up. And who would have thought, if you, once again, nobody, if you would have told me Trump, if you would have told me everything, and if you would have told me the great, this could be a battleground state, like this could be a proven ground, this could be someone's Waterloo, Wisconsin, I would have said no. But here it comes again, Wisconsin, and once again, really? Sure. Wisconsin's primary is Wednesday.
Doesn't it seem that
Tuesday?
Yeah.
Thank you. And once again, if you would have told me it was Wednesday, I would have said no. Tuesday, and everything seems to be riding for both parties.
For both parties on Wisconsin. Doesn't it seem like this happens every other week that there is a do or die primary or caucus or something else that
they have the best script writers this year?
Yes, Wisconsin is do or die. New York will be do or die. Yes. Pennsylvania will be do or die. That they're all going to be like that because
until someone dies.
No, hopefully that doesn't happen. But I think especially on the Republican side, we're all trying to figure out, okay, what does Donald Trump need to get to 1,237, and then we all have to face that moment where we either go our separate ways or sell our soul. I will be selling my soul, thank you very much. But, you know, if Trump loses Wisconsin, in fact, if he gets shut out of Wisconsin, then that means he has to do better in New York, possibly, than folks thought. Now, the polling out of New York actually says that he would probably get all of the delegates at this point, in which case he may not need Wisconsin as much as everyone thinks he does.
Right.
But it's going to be a matter of, for this state, if Trump loses it, he will lose to Ted Cruz, and then Cruz can show, hey, look, once again, I, Ted Cruz, can win outside of my region. I can win outside of my wheelhouse. I mean, let's face it. At the beginning of this campaign, did anybody think Wisconsin would ever go for Ted Cruz? I don't think so. But that may very well be what happens on Tuesday, in which case he has a better shot at saying that he is the national candidate and that he is the place for the anti-Trump vote to go.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you real quick.
That's fine. No,
does Kasich have a chance? You would think Ohio not being that, now, granted, I don't like the drive, but Ohio not being that far, Kasich, I'm doing my air quotes, being the moderate, does Kasich stand a chance?
No.
Okay.
Kasich, because here's the thing. Kasich couldn't beat Cruz. Kasich beat Trump in Ohio. Wonderful.
Well, sure. And I live here, and I know that one, yeah.
But not only has Kasich been unable to beat Trump anywhere else, but outside of New Hampshire, Kasich hasn't been able to beat Cruz anywhere else. Cruz beat him in Michigan. Cruz beat him in Illinois. So the notion that Kasich could be competitive against Cruz, let alone Trump, farther away from Ohio than Michigan and Illinois, where he couldn't beat Cruz, I think is just not wise. The only place left where Kasich can do well, in my opinion, is in Pennsylvania. And possibly New York because of the southern tier and upstate. I don't know upstate as well as, say, Kevin might.
I was going to say, what about Maryland?
I don't know about Maryland because Maryland is, and this is the thing, Kasich has done decently in a couple of New England states.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
But he didn't do very well in Maine at all.
Oh,
he got clobbered in Maine. And the you know Maryland is a middle is a mid-Atlantic state, and the question is really going to be which you know Larry Hogan is already who's the governor of Maryland has already said there's no way that, that he'll ever support Trump. So the question really is going to be which of those two guys is closer to Trump as Maryland comes closer, and that person will probably get the consolidated anti-Trump vote. My assumption is that that'd be Ted Cruz because that's been the case in just about every other state that we're looking at. So, you know, upper New England, upper Kasich has done well in upper New England and in Ohio and nowhere else.
Yeah, that's interesting. I still have a feeling that we haven't heard the last of John Kasich, but I'm thinking more about the convention and we'll get to that in a little while. But let's stay on Wisconsin for a minute. So
on Wisconsin.
So my question to you, DJ, is, you know, I'm reading the articles, but I haven't really paid it as much attention to the granular delegate counting as I have on the Democratic side. What is the difference? It's a proportional state, right?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it's winner take all?
It's winner take all by congressional district with some at large winner take all seats as well. There are 18 there are 18 delegates that are statewide winner take all, mm-hmm. and then there are 3 delegates for each congressional district that are winner take all. So if for example Cruz is ahead by 6 points as the CBS YouGov poll has, mm-hmm. he'll win statewide and he'll probably win a majority of districts, which means he'll get anywhere from 30 to 36 seats, 36 delegates. If he's 10 points up, which is what the Marquette poll had, and Marquette is a more local regional polling group up there, he may end up getting all 42 delegates out of that.
Oh, okay.
Which would be very, very good for him and very, very bad for Trump. The thing is, the way, you know, at this point, Trump has to get about 53 to 54% of the remaining delegates that are on the table in order to have a majority going into Cleveland. And getting 0 out of Wisconsin would hurt him. But if he gets all 95 out of New York, like I said, he can make up for that fairly quickly.
Right.
So that's why I think, I mean, a defeat in Wisconsin would be bad for Trump, and it would be a shot in the arm for Ted Cruz. Of that, there is no doubt. But Wisconsin is also very unusual in that, for one thing, the Republican establishment in the state, such as it is far more popular than it is in other states. Governor Walker is very well liked by Wisconsin Republicans. Donald Trump made the very bad mistake of hitting Walker from the left.
He sure did.
Which is the wrong thing to do in a Republican primary.
Yeah.
And it may have been part of the thing that pushed Club for Growth out to endorse Cruz, which it has done over the last week or two. And you really see, I think, among large chunks of the conservative movement, particularly the economic conservative movement now, the assumption that, look, it's either it's Ted Cruz or it's nobody. We have a lot of problems with John Kasich's record in Ohio. We have a lot of problems with the way John Kasich has behaved about his record in Ohio, frankly. And I will say this, there have been a lot of times where a lot of Republicans, frankly, including Ted Cruz, have sort of used the Bible as a shield for whatever position that they take, and it's annoyed a lot of people. I finally understood how they felt when John Kasich tried to use the Bible to defend his Medicaid expansion. So now, Greg and Kevin, I know how you feel, and now I understand how pissed you are and how pissed you've been for the last 20 to 30 years. I get it now.
40 to 50, but other than that.
Okay. I didn't realize it was that long, but in any event, I just know what I've witnessed. But so I think for a lot of folks, for a lot of economic conservatives, basically it's Ted Cruz or it's nobody at this point.
Can Ted Cruz win at this point? If Trump, New York Times had Trump needing 47%, actually not 54, of the remaining delegates of each state.
That's because the New York Times is once again showing us that in addition to being ideologically different,
what's Cruz's number?
I didn't know that math was ideological, but okay.
It is.
No, I was not saying
that. There's the left math.
What I was saying was that in addition to being ideologically rigid, they are also enumerate. Greg laughed so hard nobody could hear me.
I'm sorry. I knew where the joke was going.
Okay, very good. But
using common core Cruz, math, that's all.
You know, Cruz will – oh, nice one, Kevin. Cruz would need something like 80 to 90% of the remaining delegates. I think it would be very difficult.
That's science fiction, though.
The truth. And I don't disagree. I'm a Cruz guy now, but I don't think he's going to get to 1237 going to the convention.
Of course not.
What I think Cruz wants, and what I think his backers want, is to have Cruz maybe somewhere about 800, 900, and have him maybe within 1 to 200 of Trump, where he can say at that point, I am the only real alternative to Donald Trump at this point. It is me or it is Trump. Winning Wisconsin will help with that because it will push that narrative. Going forward, if he does well in the other states, that will continue to push that narrative. So what Ted Cruz wants is he wants to stop Donald Trump from getting to 1237. Frankly, if I'm the Cruz campaign, I want to stop Donald Trump from getting anywhere near 1100. I want to keep him below 1100.
Sure.
I want to get to maybe 800 and 900 myself, which is, I think, doable. And then going into the convention, you can look at all the uncommitted delegates, like in the North Dakota caucuses today.
Sure.
You can look at Rubio delegates. You can look at some of the other folks who built up delegates out there, maybe pile it together so that you can be very, very close to Trump going into Cleveland. And you can say, look, this is really a two-person race. It's between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, and that's it. And again, I think Wisconsin for him will be a help for that. The interesting thing that I'm finding curious, and I'm going to throw back to you two on this one, is I'm seeing polling out of Wisconsin, the Marquette poll, the one that had Ted Cruz up by 10 points, actually had Bernie Sanders up by about 4 or 5.
Yeah, actually, I'm not sure.
Let me just double check that. Okay, go ahead.
Now, a lot of the polls have had Bernie Sanders up 4 or 5,
now,
or 2 or 3.
Given the nature of Wisconsin, that doesn't necessarily surprise me.
Yeah.
My question is this. Do you both think that if Bernie wins by 4 or 5 points, it's nice, blah, blah, blah. But if Bernie can actually crack 50%, say, and he can get a majority, maybe even stretch it out to 10 points.
10 points?
That's a big if. Can he then make New York competitive?
No.
I'm going to say he can make New York competitive either way, but she's going to win New York. Competitive is, coming within 6-7 points, right? She's going to win New York. Even if he was to eke out a 2 or a 3 point win in New York, it would be a huge moral victory. It would certainly, set the blogosphere and social media ablaze. CNN and MSNBC will be going nuts. It still doesn't change the delegate math.
You'd have to ban another dozen more people from Open Fire.
Well, that would make my day.
Oh, okay. My goodness.
I was just curious.
No, I think, even if he wins Wisconsin by 10, and we always talk about, there's always talk about momentum. But I think it's something the media talks about more than is actually a truism. We've got all this momentum coming from this last one. We've got a lot of momentum. But when it actually comes to votes and how much it affects and whether people are going to come out, I don't think it really matters that much.
Well, hey, Kevin, do you remember I've Got Big Mo? that one?
Yeah. Who? Help me. Who was it again?
That was Bush the Elder and
I. Oh, yeah. Right. Big Mo. That's right.
Big Mo. Big Mo hit Big Granite, and that was the end of the day.
Yeah. That's right. That was 80. That was 80, right?
Yep. That was 80.
But his momentum carried him into 88. So there.
So his Big Mo became Long Mo.
Yeah, exactly.
He works on the long game.
Yeah.
The really long game.
In which case, Bernie Sanders would be running in his 80s. So let's talk about momentum, because this is a really interesting point. And it's a valid point that the Sanders people obviously are grasping onto like a life preserver. The thing with momentum is it only counts if it turns around the race. Momentum in and of itself is not an electability issue. Momentum in and of itself does not win you the nomination. Delegates win you the nomination. There is no award for ending the race better than the other guy. Because remember, she had momentum for the first half of the race. And that counts for nothing at a certain point. So momentum is important if he cashes in on it. If he doesn't, then it's it was just a nice feeling for a while.
Yeah, the one thing I think that is that makes it a little different on the Democrat side is the superdelegate factor. And momentum can actually, I think, have an effect on the superdelegates themselves. If they are – granted, winning Wisconsin is not going to be enough is not going to be of momentum to get some super to get superdelegates to jump the fence or change their mind.
Right.
Even winning Wisconsin and maybe a squeaker in New York, I don't think would be enough. But I mean, Bernie would have to string together a whole bunch of states to get the momentum to turn it around, to turn around what superdelegates are thinking. But you have to start somewhere.
Yeah. No, listen. If he wins, so that's what he would do. He wins Wisconsin,
and if he wins Pennsylvania,
if he wins New York, if he wins Pennsylvania, then you know he's going to have a ton of momentum going into June 7th because he's going to win all the Midwest, the Rocky Mountain states before that.
Oh, sure.
And you know, there's five huge primaries, I think, on the 7th of June, if I'm not mistaken. Look, if he wins all of these and he pulls within 100 delegates, there's a case to be made, and the superdelegates then will come into play. I still don't envision hundreds of superdelegates jumping ship. Now, what doesn't let me just finish my thought. What doesn't get spoken about a lot is everybody talks about Hillary's massive lead with the superdelegates, and I'm ballparking now. It's somewhere around, you know, she's got 470 and he's got 30, rough figures.
He's got 24.
Oh, I thought it was 29. But anyways, whatever it is,
Either way.
But what doesn't get spoken about is there's still about 250 superdelegates out there to be had, maybe a little less. And those people haven't gone to Hillary yet, and a good portion of them may be waiting for an excuse to go with Sanders. So he may pick up, you know, more than 50% of those. You know, and people keep talking about 2008. I've seen a lot of posts on Facebook, which is where I live these days, talking about all the superdelegates who switched in 2008. Well, the reality is, there were only 27 net superdelegate switches from Clinton to Obama in 2008. 27 total, which, you know, is a drop in the bucket compared to what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, and people are, you know, for better or worse, afraid of the Clintons, and they're afraid to backstab them. And I just don't see a whole giant bunch of political operatives and politicians deciding to dump Hillary Clinton just because Bernie Sanders won a couple of moderately important states toward the end of the campaign.
Let's not say not just fear, but the people who are superdelegates, who are appointed superdelegates and who run for superdelegates, the whole thing, these are stellar, these are lifelong Democrats. These are either elected officials,
yes,
unions. These are people who have been with the party like 40, 50 years. These are capital D Democrats.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a card carrying. I actually have a card that says I've been, you know, district such and such. I'm a Democrat. And there is a lot of offense in the capital D Democrat, you know, that Bernie Sanders has been a Democrat for 7 months.
Well, that means nothing to his supporters. They just don't care about it. They
right.
see that as a badge of honor.
But to the superdelegates, these are people who have fought and who have been to, you know, who every couple of years we get whooped up and when we win, it's great. But when we lose, we're still Democrats. And a lot of his supporters are like, hey, isn't it great that we're not political, that we can be this group and then this group and we don't belong to it? No, we're Democrats.
Well, I think, yeah, I think there would be a good deal, again, I think there'd be a good deal more pressure on them, and not maybe not the ones who've already come out for Hillary, but the ones who are uncommitted, to consider what Bernie has built up if Bernie wins Wisconsin and then New York and Pennsylvania. I don't see him winning either New York or Pennsylvania, by the way. I don't see him winning either state. But again, you know, if he doesn't win Wisconsin, then it's almost guaranteed he doesn't win either state. So it has to start
in Wisconsin. I think he will win Wisconsin, though. I think he'll win it by at least 5 or 6 points.
There's a chance. She still has a chance there, and I'll tell you why. First of all, there was a poll that came out today that actually has her. Let me find it. There's one that has Sanders up by 2, but there was another one I saw that – yesterday – Laura S. College. I don't know whether that's
I saw that one too.
They have Clinton up by 6 in Wisconsin. So you know, a lot of it is polling methodology and you know how good their sample is. But frankly, when you're talking about an open primary, and you know a lot of people again, the real energy is on the GOP side. A lot of people who might otherwise come out to vote for Bernie, you know, independents or non-affiliated people, might just decide they want to go vote against Trump because they hate him so much. And they may end up voting for Ted Cruz instead. When that could hurt him. What do you think, DJ?
I honestly think I was going to say the reverse based on what I've seen on the Republican side, is that the Trump campaign has had such a bad week, particularly up there. They have had such a down week there that I actually think a lot of folks who are looking to shake it up are going to probably go away from Trump and towards Bernie. And I think the fact that Cruz is now perceived to be the favorite in Wisconsin will probably be enough for those anti-Trump Democrats or anti-Trump independents to say, you know, I don't necessarily have to do that. It looks like the Republicans are going to vote for Cruz in this state. I'll shift over to the Democratic side or just not
at
all.
Great.
So I think that's to some extent, that's why I think Bernie has a bit more of an advantage in Wisconsin, because Trump, either for Trump or against Trump, is not necessarily pulling Democrats and independents away from the Democratic primary in Wisconsin the way he did in the other states.
Well, okay, time will tell. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying we're just guessing. We're just, you know, using different theories, and we will find out for sure on Tuesday.
We'll find out on Tuesday.
But speaking of guessing.
Wait, I'm sorry. I don't know where you were going with that, but I do want to go back for a moment to speak about superdelegates. Were you...
Go ahead.
Shady topics?
No, you go ahead.
No.
You go ahead.
Because
superdelegates
have been a hot topic for several weeks now, and I guess we've already beaten it to death. But the thing that I'm seeing now trending a lot on social media is this myth that there are a lot of lobbyists who are secret superdelegates who are planted there to ensure that the establishment candidate gets the nomination. And as I'm sure you guys know, but I want to say this for our audience, this is a myth. Are there people who are superdelegates who also happen to be lobbyists? Yes, but that's because they are former congressmen or senators who were in the House of Representatives or in the Senate for decades, and then when they either lost or retired from their seats, they went into the lobbying business, but they are still considered party leaders. Who are these people? Tom Daschle is one. Dick Gephardt is another. And I can list a few more names of very well-known Democrats who also happen to do some lobbying work. Now, the idea that these people are somehow Hillary plants, it's nonsense. They like her for the same reason that the other superdelegates like her. They worked with her. They know her. They know her reputation. Maybe they know Bernie's reputation and feel that she'd be the stronger candidate and the stronger president. But this idea that some, you know, Lloyd Blankfeld type is, you know, going to go in there and screw with the delegate count because they want to keep Bernie Sanders from getting the nomination so he can't destroy Wall Street, it's pure fiction. It doesn't exist.
I'll go one further. The concept of memes and politics drive me nuts. And the fact that there are entire sites and Facebook pages for both parties and both sides dedicated just to memes for and against candidates drives me nuts, because 99% of them are wrong. And if they're not wrong, they're outdated. And yeah, I get sent tons of them from like family members all the time. Like, oh, this, look at my civil liberties, or hey, your candidate is this, or hey, our president. And I'm like, no. No, none of this is right. Yeah. So, someone got really lazy, put up a picture, threw some words on it, and said, unleashed it onto the internet and said, fly, my monkeys, fly.
The best meme that I have ever seen is the one with the little kid in front of the computer that says, oh, now that April 1st is over, everything on the internet is true again, right? Right. That pretty much sums it up right there. I do think it's interesting, though, that from what you were talking about in that the nasty word on the Democratic side for these wire pullers is lobbyists. On my side, on the Republican side, nobody gives a damn about lobbyists. It's the campaign consultants who are evil.
Right.
They're called the consultant class, and they are considered a bunch of money grubbing leeches who basically don't care don't give a damn about the country and don't give a damn about the party, so long as they make their money off campaigns, giving bad advice. Now, I'm not necessarily agreeing with this now.
Sure.
Giving bad advice to the same candidates over and over again, and not caring if they elect a bunch of weak, weak vassals who do anything that the president wants them to do, because while they only care about spending money on campaigns and earning money off of campaigns, and they don't really care what happens to the rest of the country. Those are the bad guys on my side of the aisle, the campaign consultants.
That's awesome.
That has nothing to do with lobbyists and of course, well, elected officials themselves.
I was a campaign consultant for like 4 or 5 years, and one, I didn't make any money. It pays nothing to be a Democratic campaign consultant.
Oh, to be a Republican campaign consultant. You can do very well.
I thought about changing at one point.
You can do extraordinarily well.
I noticed that the Democratic campaign consultants, we always wore jeans and like a sports coat. That was like our uniform. Like, hey, we're a Democrat campaign consultant. We're kind of young and cool. And the Republican campaign consultants always wore suits.
Of course.
And, you know, they'd be like, hey, let's powwow. Let's go to a restaurant. And I'd be like, Bennigan's is great. Or how about, Fridays? And they'd say, how about this, $200 steakhouse? And I'd be like, oh.
Because they weren't paying for it. Their idiot candidate was.
I said, I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah.
I'm going to go home and make memes.
So speaking of Republican consultants and the craziness on my side of the aisle, the reason why everyone is interested in Wisconsin is because essentially if Ted Cruz wins Wisconsin, it presumes, I think they're wrong, but it presumes that it makes it almost impossible for Donald Trump to get to 1237, and then we will almost certainly have the contested, brokered, open, fistfight, gunfire, whatever you want to call it, convention in Cleveland.
Oh, I just orgasmed.
And we are now actually I didn't need that, Kevin. I really didn't. I'll never unhear that. The listeners will never unhear that.
That's okay. I have dry ones. Go ahead.
We are now actually at the point where the Republican National Committee has suddenly come to the realization that it actually has to set the rules for this thing, and it doesn't know what to do. The biggest argument has been over whether they're going to maintain Rule 40B, the one that says you have to have a majority of delegates in 8 states to be on the ballot. There's no reason that rule has to be in place for the 2016 convention. That's up to the committee. There's one committee member who says he wants anybody who has a delegate to be eligible on the first ballot, which would mean at least 8 candidates, including many who've suspended their campaigns. And then, of course, there's the fact that whatever the committee decides, as those of you who may remember the 1952 convention, which would actually be us, but I'm reading it somewhere.
Yes.
The convention delegates on the floor can actually come up with their own rules about who is and who isn't on the first ballot and who is and who isn't a delegate, meaning that everything the committee does can be completely wiped out by Monday morning.
Let me ask you a question. I know that you probably have more to say, but let me just jump in and ask a quick question.
Oh, that's fine. I was actually running out of things to say.
Oh, okay. So let's say that, the rules committee, or, there's a giant vote of the rules, to agree to or whatever it is, confirm the rules. And they say that someone has to have 8 states to be put into nomination. Okay, let's assume that. So now you've got only Donald Trump and only Ted Cruz have been put to nomination. Then they start calling the states. What happens if 12 delegates from a state say we're voting for John Kasich? What happens to those votes?
They can't. As I would understand it, the only thing that those delegates can do is vote
present.
Is abstain.
Or they can say that, and then the chair only recognizes it as abstaining, right?
That could very well be. They could say we're voting for John Kasich, and the chair says we don't recognize your vote. We put it in as an abstention,
right?
Or of course it could. And this is going to be an interesting parliamentary question. Is if they are rejected votes, this is a question I don't know the answer to. Let's say there are 30 rejected votes. Are those rejected votes included in the 2472, in which case you need 1237? Or are they simply rejected and junked, reducing the number of valid votes to 2442 and reducing the majority needed to 1222?
Right.
That's a question I don't have the answer for, because I honestly don't know. We've never gone through one of these. So the first question would be, who gets to be on the ballot? And again, the convention delegates themselves can change the rules.
Right.
So you could have a situation where the committee says, we're dumping Rule 40B, and the Trump and Cruz delegates together get together and say, no, we want 40B back so nobody else gets a shot.
Right. And also, isn't it possible, DJ, that they can, you know, pass a set of rules with 40B, which is the 8 states or more rule? They could do that on Monday. On Tuesday or Wednesday, they could start having ballot after ballot, and they're hopelessly deadlocked. Nobody's getting to 1237. Can't somebody make a motion at that point to revise the rules and throw that out again?
I think they could. I can't see why not.
Right. At any point, they could decide that they want to let other names into nomination.
That's certainly possible.
Right.
So
that is very possible.
What point does it become Thunderdome?
I think on Wednesday morning, but
yeah, I don't think it will necessarily become Thunderdome. I think what is going to be what's more intriguing for me among all these things, among all the other things, what is going to be more intriguing is how the convention managers, who are going to be the Wisconsin boys, back to Wisconsin, Rince Priebus and Paul Ryan. How they're going to be able to – how can they put the face of the divided party up on the TV screens on Monday or Tuesday? You still have to have a keynote. You still have to have the various speeches. You still have to have the platform. All of these things that are supposed to be choreographed and stage managed to put the best face of the party forward, they'll still have to try to do all – they'll at least attempt to try to do all of these things without an actual nominee decided, and with quite possibly the party still very, very divided about – who that nominee will be. And it is going to be very entertaining to watch, you know, Republican elected official after elected official basically bash Hillary Clinton, bash her some more, and then bash her a third time because they have nothing else to talk about. Right?
This is a question I always wonder. So, you know, at this year's Democratic convention, Obama's going to be a rock star. I mean, he'll show off. Right. There'll be lights. There'll be the helicopter. I mean, it'll be awesome. Earth, Wind, and Fire's going to be playing.
And Joe Biden, too, by the way. Go ahead.
And Joe Biden.
Are the Greek columns coming back?
Everything. Oh, we love the Greek columns. Will W be there? Because of
that. No.
No.
No, he will not be there.
There. Will
Cheney
nobody
maybe.
Wants him there.
What?
Nobody wants him there.
Cheney? Any
Will Cheney?
No, I don't think Dick Cheney will be there either.
I mean
Cheney is more popular within the party than Bush is, but Cheney is also Cheney and Bush, frankly, are very politically astute, and they both know, or at least they will be told, and they will agree with what they're being told, that it would be better for the party if they were not there. So I don't think Cheney's going to. I don't think Cheney's going to be there either.
Okay.
Okay. Well, so, I keep seeing Bush the first on the Final Four games. So,
do you guys know the story of how Warren G. Harding got the nomination in 1920?
I think I do.
The Times did not declare for a first raider, so they went with a second raider, and they went with him.
Well, this is the story. I first read this in the Gore Vidal novel Hollywood, which was a historical novel with some true historical elements in it. Great novel, by the way. And it took place in that time, and part of the novel took place at the Republican convention. And this was the story that they told in that book, and I've since seen it in several different places on the web, so obviously it's true.
Obviously it's true.
Of course.
I think I saw it in a meme.
And even if it's not, it should be true. So I'm going to tell this story anyways.
You go ahead.
So, you know, there were several different candidates. I don't remember the names, but they're not important because they didn't ultimately get the nomination. But you're talking about the classic hopelessly deadlocked convention that right. went, I don't know whether it was 8 or 12 or 20 ballots, but it was some ridiculous number going into the second day of balloting. And finally, they break for nighttime. And, of course, these were the days of the smoke-filled back rooms, the party bosses. Well, the story, as I recall from reading the book and as I understand it, is the party bosses couldn't even come to a decision. And they were up until all hours of the morning, you know, 2, 3, right. 4 o'clock in the morning, arguing among themselves, you know. And Warren Harding was not, you know, I don't even know whether he was on the first several ballots. But he was, I think, the governor of Ohio. Is that right, DJ? Do you know?
He was a United States senator. And oh. I do know he had a small following at the convention because he had made a brief name for himself by essentially beating the hell out of the Treaty of Versailles
right.
in a Senate Foreign Committee hearing.
Right. Okay, so
there were a very few people who liked him, but he was not okay. considered a major player during the early ballots.
Okay, so I can't say for sure what state he was from. He's clearly he was a senator. And he had
he was
a
from
small,
Ohio.
Okay. Thank you. And he had a small following. So here's the story as it was told in several different places that I've read. His campaign manager, you know, was trying to get into the room or was in the room trying to cut a deal. Nothing was happening. They were hopelessly deadlocked. And everybody said, let's go to sleep and we'll start again in the morning. And his campaign manager left that meeting and decided to start a rumor that the bosses had all agreed on Warren Harding. Well, it was a game of telephone that took hold, and the rumor spread by wildfire. And by the time the bosses woke up in the morning, everybody had heard that Warren Harding was the guy, and they couldn't undo it. And the next ballot, Harding was over the top and got the nomination. Now, I'm giving a Cliff Notes version of that story. It was much more colorful in the novel.
I'm sure.
But the point in telling this is, once you get beyond the first ballot, anything can happen.
Oh, of course. If it goes to a second ballot, all hell breaks loose.
All hell breaks loose. All bets are off. And the other point I'd like to make, and if I made this point last week, and I'm repeating myself, I apologize. I'm sure it won't be the first time I've done that.
That's all right.
A lot of people say, "Hey, look, if Trump goes in with 1,200 or 1,150 delegates, you can't deny him the nomination because people will be." You know, they'll be rioting in the streets and blah, blah, blah. And what I think people are not understanding is that would make sense if it went from Trump having, let's say, 1,180 delegates to Trump losing on the second ballot. Yes, then you could see all of a sudden there would be this kind of like rug pulled out from under us. What happened? But what I think is more likely to happen, and I'm just speculating, but hell, that's what we do here.
That's what we do.
Of course.
What I think is more likely to happen, as DJ kind of laid out before, Trump goes in, let's say he's within 30 or 50 delegates, but he falls short on the first ballot. Cruz has 700, 800 delegates, and John Kasich goes in with 350. I don't know whether that's possible or not. I mean, how many does he have around now, DJ?
He's got about 140 right
okay,
now.
Okay, yeah, he's got less than Rubio.
He has less than Rubio.
But let's
say
he'll
go in less 141.
Okay, 141. That seems right. Yeah, I'll buy that projection. Okay, so now we go to a second ballot. Now here's the thing: Donald Trump will not add delegates on a second ballot. He will only start to bleed because there are people right now who've already said they're jumping ship if it goes to a second ballot, and I believe them. Okay. So you go to your second vote. You know, they'll probably, after the first vote, they're going to take a recess for a half hour, an hour. Let's see where we are. All of the backroom posturing is going to start. Eventually, Paul Ryan gavels everything back into session. They vote again. Second ballot, Trump now has maybe 100, 150 votes less. And Cruz has increased his count, and John Kasich has increased his count. Assuming, of course, Kasich has been...
So he's at 142 now.
Right, he's at... Yeah. No, assuming, of course, Kasich has been put into nomination, okay?
Right.
And that's an assumption I'm going to make for this story. And frankly, I think a lot of those people that jump ship from Trump would go to Kasich. I think that there's a feeling that Kasich is a much stronger potential fall candidate than his actual strength in the primaries have shown. And for a lot of other reasons, I think that you could see his numbers start to pop up a little bit. So now it's like, oh, gee, what's happening to Donald Trump? He's losing support. Now you have another recess. Now you go to a third ballot. He goes even further down. What's going to happen is with every ballot, I don't know when Cruz wins, but with every ballot, Trump is going from the presumptive nominee to, oh my God, he's cratering.
No,
so
I agree.
It's going to be a new reality. And this will all be covered on television with John King and Rachel Maddow and Sean Hannity all commenting on it. And it's not going to be like, oh my God, they stole it from Donald Trump. It's going to be, oh my God, Donald Trump just fell apart. And so it's not going to feel like it was stolen from him. It's going to feel like he lost it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And the real interesting thing is going to be what kind of rules, if again, and it's so dependent upon the rules, and we don't know what the rules are.
Because there are no rules. Right?
Right. There are no rules at this point. So
right. It's
if Kasich is considered eligible, you know, what actually is his ceiling? Is he going to, you know, how far is he going to be able to get? And that's an open question. If it's open, if the balloting gets open to someone who hasn't even run,
right,
or who is no longer running, then we have the next question of, you know, what does Donald Trump do if his delegate count starts, if it slips below 1,000? Does he fight to the bitter end, or does he call up the various other folks and says, you know something, you guys aren't going to go with me. I get that. It's annoying. I'm not happy with it. I have a lot of people. You better back. I'm going to tell all my delegates to go to person X, and you better support him. You know, what if he says, fine, I'm not doing it, but I want Chris Christie to be the nominee.
Yeah, you know, because that would sound like a rational.
Are you saying Donald Trump would do that? Why would Donald Trump ever do anything like that?
Because if the numbers are starting to drop for him in the second and third ballot, and he realizes he is not going to win, then he can do one of two things. He can either squawk and scream and pull out and run third party and do all that other stuff he said he's going to do, or he could say, okay, fine. If it's not going to be me, it better be Chris Christie. Oh, it's not going to be me. It better be whoever else is endorsing him. I don't know who the heck else is out there. You know, he could
Sarah
you know,
Palin. About,
Sarah Palin. You know, he talks about being a deal maker all the time. Maybe
no.
he decides.
No.
You
no.
know, let's see if I make a deal.
Listen, again, we're all just speculating. Obviously, nothing could be ruled out. But that's not the Donald Trump I've been watching for the last 8 months. I don't see him being magnanimous about anything.
Yeah, but the Donald Trump we've watched for the last 3 days has taken three different positions on abortion.
That's true.
So there's no reason to think he's going to hold a position on anything else.
Okay. Well, it's, again, very interesting theory. Very interesting theory. I certainly have not heard that anyplace else.
And I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying
it's a possibility, yeah. Well, we have spent 44 or 45 minutes talking mostly about the Republicans. But there is a little bit of heat on the Democratic side, so maybe we should spend the last few minutes again looking at the Bernie threat. Is it real? And the debate over debates, specifically whether there's going to be a New York debate or not. I think there's going to be. I don't think it's going to be in Brooklyn. I think it will be on a night that is, that the Sanders people are happy with, probably a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. Greg, where are you in all this?
Ah, jeez. All right. First, it was they want. They just complain. I'm done with them. I'm so done with them.
No, I'm sorry. I'm pulling you back in. You've got to be undone.
No. Okay. I mean, I'm a hardcore. Like, it's debate night. Let's make debate nachos. Let's do this. I have not only my Facebook, but I have all my Twitter on. I'm on it. But even I am done watching the debates at this point. If you don't know what your candidate stands for at this point, and you're just hoping for, you know, Hillary Clinton to say, oh, by the way, I did eat those children.
Yeah.
If that's what you're hoping for, it's not going to happen. No matter if we have 100 million debates, move on. You know, but yes, we will have another debate because otherwise she's an evil person.
I'm actually going to disagree with you some. If Hillary does win Wisconsin, I don't think there's going to be a debate.
Really?
I think if she wins Wisconsin, then I think her attitude will then the campaign's attitude will certainly be there's no point. We won Wisconsin. If they win Wisconsin, if Clinton wins Wisconsin, she's going to win New York. She's going to win Pennsylvania. I think she'll win them anyway, but it's a dead certainty if she wins Wisconsin.
Right.
Wisconsin is one of the last of those states that Bernie is supposed to win. If he can't win Wisconsin, then he's certainly not going to win New York or Pennsylvania. Okay, and then she doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, okay, outspending her like 5-1.
I think it's even bigger. But let's say for the purpose of argument that he does win Wisconsin.
Okay.
I think she's going to have to debate him because I think the mantra of she was afraid to debate me in her home turf will be too hard for her to avoid.
Okay, so she will debate him. It will be in New York, and she will mention the words Michael Bloomberg and gun control for 2 hours.
And 9/11 for another hour.
Two words, those four words and that date will be part of her answers for 2 hours. That's all she'll ever talk about. And then she'll really wax him.
Well, she'll also talk about Black Lives Matters and gun control. Well, you said Michael Bloomberg, I'm sorry. And a couple of other, you know, issues that resonate with her constituency there. But, you know, he did get her to, you know, a lot of people still are debating whether whether the kerfuffle over, what was it before Michigan? The kerfuffle over the auto bailout vote, which I actually thought in real time, I thought she won. But a lot of people say that Sanders actually may have turned that to his advantage by claiming that she had misrepresented his vote because there were two different votes and one he voted yes and the other he voted no.
Well, it's the auto bailout's not going to be the issue in New York.
No. But I'm saying that he was able to turn things around in that major industrial state on the strength of a very late debate in the, you know, it was, I think, 3 days before the actual primary, and the bump didn't even show up in the polls because there were no polls between Saturday night and Tuesday. And that's what they're hoping for again, that, yes, she will make some unforced error or forced error, and that will give him the little bit of momentum and impetus needed to actually somehow cross the finish line ahead of her.
Yeah, but the problem is it's the New York primary. This is the one state in the union where the bank bailout is probably more popular than it is unpopular. In any of the 49 states, Bernie, and in fact that's what Bernie did in the Michigan debate, was he changed the subject to the bank bailout, and that's how he ended up winning that exchange.
Right.
You can't win that exchange in the New York primary.
Yeah,
maybe in any of the other 49 states of the union, but not in New York. So I don't really see. I mean, whether there's again, I have always sold Bernie short, and I will continue to sell Bernie short because I think selling Bernie short is the smart move. So even if they do have a debate, I don't see him making the headway he needs to win in New York. I don't see him winning in Pennsylvania.
I don't either. But that's what it's all based on. Because if he doesn't win those, I just don't see how he can have any claim on the nomination. Even if he wins them, You know, I meant to do this today, and I got busy with family stuff, but I was hoping to come in and be able to actually list all the major states that Hillary Clinton won over Barack Obama in the latter part of the 2008 campaign, and he still got the nomination, which I guess could be an argument for the fact that Bernie Sanders could somehow get the nomination, even losing Pennsylvania and New York and California. But the delegates don't add up. And you have to be ahead on the delegates.
The delegates don't add up. You're right. The delegates do not add up. And I think what we are, you know, this is the inevitable march to where Clinton is going to do what her husband did 24 years ago, namely cinch the nomination in California.
Okay.
That's pretty much what it will probably take that long because a number of the superdelegates may hold back and just wait or blah blah whatever. But I think it's if she doesn't hit the magic number before California, she will definitely hit the magic number with California.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then of course, well, she may not hit the magic number without the superdelegates, but with the superdelegates, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think way ahead of that. And then the last thing that we might want to talk about this week is the saga of the Clinton emails, which I don't know that anything tangible has happened on that story this week, but I've seen
That's because nothing tangible happened.
Right.
You had the State Department, which was the...
Exactly.
This has been looked at by... is being looked at by three different departments or three different groups. You have the State Department, which never wanted this looked at in the first place. So naturally, they've been trying to find some excuse to shut this down the first chance they get. I think they found some this week.
Right.
You've got the Justice Department, which is moving into the final stage of whatever the heck they're doing. And you've got the people who really want this to be a big deal, which is the intelligence community through their inspector general. They're the ones who are pushing this hard because they're the ones who are essentially looking to get their pound of flesh from the State Department. They don't care that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State when it happened because they've been spewing this stuff on. They've been hitting Colin Powell, whether they've been hitting Condoleezza Rice, whether they've been hitting John Kerry with it. As far as the intelligence community is concerned, the State Department can't control its own goddamn emails, and the intelligence community basically wants all email control taken away from the State Department. That's what the intelligence community wants, and they're going to pound this over and over and over again on that until they win their bureaucratic battle, and they don't care what's going on in the overall political world. So the fact that the State Department has let its own investigation go on this long has actually surprised me. But you know, this is an issue that to the extent it hurts Mrs. Clinton at all, it will only hurt her in the state of Virginia, which is one of only two states in the country where classified email is a big deal. Now, as it happens, Virginia is a swing state this year. So if the nominee is not Donald Trump, then this could ironically come back to haunt her. But if the nominee is Donald Trump, then again, she simply has to follow Don Imus's advice from 1996 for her husband, which is namely to not die.
But let me ask you on that. I mean, obviously you're saying that because Langley is in Virginia, the CIA headquarters. But are there enough CIA employees that actually live in Virginia to sway that state?
It's more than just CIA. The fact that she has treated secret and top secret information in such a callous format, whether it's legal or illegal,
allegedly,
or not,
okay,
allegedly,
fine. That is. Okay, that is something that is going to be noticed by, yes, CIA folks in Langley. It's going to be noticed by military folks in Hampton Roads and in the Pentagon. And it's going to be noticed by federal employees on both sides of the Potomac River. And federal employees on the Virginia side of the Potomac River are much more in the center politically than federal employees on the Maryland side of the Potomac River. And this is something that is going to affect them. They're not going to be happy about it. Now, if the nominee is Trump, it doesn't matter. If the nominee is Cruz, Cruz has a long road to hoe because they're going to be upset at him over the shutdown in 2013.
Right.
But if the nominee happens to be somebody else who is neither Trump nor Cruz, and again, that is an outside possibility.
You're right, but you're running out of people. You're running
admittedly so.
You're running out of fingers to count here.
Yeah, I get it. the point I'm trying to make is that this is going to be something that in Virginia, among military folks, among military contractors, among military civilians, and among intelligence civilians, this is a mark against her, and this is a problem that she will have to overcome. Again, depending upon who the Republican nominee is, overcoming it could be very fairly easy for her, but it is still an obstacle for her, and it happens to be an obstacle in one of the swing states in the country. It's a weird local issue, but it happens to be a local issue for her here.
So you brought up something. Even with Cruz shutting down the government, you would still prefer him over Hillary?
Me? Oh, yes, I would.
Okay, just checking.
And keep in mind,
I threw that out. So I was fair game.
I did. I did. There were some. I did not think that was the best tactical move, in part because he was a freshman senator from Texas. If you are a president and you shut down the government, you win. You win every time. Every single time. If you are not the president and you shut down the government, you do not win. You lose every single time.
Well, can I point out that the last president who shut down the government also almost got impeached, or did get impeached and almost got convicted? So I'm not sure that was a win. Obviously, I'm talking about Bill Clinton.
But that had nothing to do with a shutdown.
I know.
Come on.
I'm just trying to add a little levity. Okay, go ahead. You were making a very valid point, TJ.
No, but that, you know, that's, yeah, you know, like I said, that's, you know, I had some tactical issues with the decision to push it to a shutdown level. But with Marco Rubio out of the race, Ted Cruz is closest to my issue set. So he's my guy until something happens.
Okay. Well, with that, should we move on to our final segment, which is predictions?
How about for predictions? We've been making predictions all the time. How about for predictions? Who's going to be, since we kind of agree Hillary's going to make it, who's going to be Hillary's running mate?
Okay. DJ, why don't you go first?
I still say it's Julian Castro.
Okay. I still say it's Elizabeth Warren.
I think it's going to be Julian Castro and his twin brother.
But they're cousins.
It's going to be like a crazy sitcom.
They laugh alike, they walk alike, at times they even vote alike.
Exactly. Uh-huh. That's okay. My tribute to Patty Duke. There you go.
The late Patty Duke,
okay,
who was
very
wonderful.
Nice.
And on the Republican side, DJ, why don't, again, you go first.
I'm going to, this is the triumph of hope over experience. I'm going to say my new guy actually gets over the line. And I think to keep the party together, he will pick Kasich as his running mate. Sorry, Greg.
Okay. Greg, I'm going to let you go last, but I'm going to go second on this one.
Sure.
My prediction this week, and I've had different predictions every week of the year, but
yeah,
my prediction...
You haven't been
wrong yet. That's right. I haven't been wrong yet because nothing's happened yet. My prediction this week is actually the reverse of DJ's. I think it's going to be a Kasich-Cruz ticket.
Wow. I think I'm going to go... I think it is going to be Trump, and I think it's going to be his daughter. I think it's going to be Trump, because she's the smartest, best looking. I mean, look at her. She's like beautiful.
She would need maternity leave, but actually, I want to jump in there and just add one last thing that I think you guys probably heard about. Trump did give some indication this week. He said that if he gets the opportunity to pick a vice presidential running mate, he would be thinking about someone who has deep experience and connections on Capitol Hill, a senator or a congressman. Now, you can read that a lot of different ways, but I thought that was very interesting. It seems to preclude Chris Christie. It seems to preclude, you know, somebody from the business world. So I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts on that? It precludes his daughter. So I thought that was very interesting. Anyways. And with go ahead. Go ahead.
No. There's a big push in Ohio, by the way. I mean, we've been getting letters and whatnot to try to have Hillary pick our Senator Sherrod Brown. Even I like the guy, but I can't see him as a running mate. I mean, he's just not a vice president type.
I would say, whoever the Republicans nominate, Hillary would probably be the favorite. But if Hillary actually picks an old white guy,
well, he's not
as her
old.
Running name.
He's not old, old.
He's traditional.
40s, 50s, he's traditional.
Where are you going?
Like that. But go on. I'm sorry.
My point is there are very few open avenues that the Republicans have to victory if the Democrats go with an all-white ticket, that could widen one of those pathways that we have. That's all I'm saying. And that's why I don't think she's going to do that. She's going to go with Julian Castro.
Okay. I agree.
Great.
I agree.
Well, with that, we've come to the end of a very long but a lot of fun episode this week. So I want to remind everybody again to please find us on Facebook, find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And, of course, that's a / or whatever they call those things. And please rate and review us on iTunes, because the more people that rate us, the more people that hear about us, and the more people that hear about us, the more people that hear us, and the more people that hear us will actually start doing a more professional show, because we'll have an audience. So with that in mind, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. Wisconsin's going to be a lot of fun, and we will hear you and see you next week.